So there is a time for everything. If you had any doubts, Ecclesiastes tells us, in Ecclesiastes, Solomon tells us a season for every activity under heaven. So we're going to talk a little bit tonight about time, and we're going to talk a little bit about the mysteries that accrue to time. Certain things happen, of course, as we see in the list that is given to us, and we ask ourselves sometimes, well, why this? Why not the other? And yet he reminds us that there is a beauty to time in the sense that God in his providential care is working out all things to his glory and the good of his saints. Well, time, what is time? Someone asked Augustine what time was, and he had no answer, and we don't have an answer this evening. The other day a fellow asked me for the time. I should have said time, it is later than you think. A little boy apparently heard the family clock go suddenly haywire and bong on unusual 14 times. So he ran to his mother and shouted, "Mummy, Mummy, it is later than it has ever been." And there's a certain truth to that, isn't it? It is later than it has ever been. Tempus fugit, as the Romans said, time flies. And I'm very conscious of that this evening, and my wife and I, that they're 52 years. And we know Ida and Stephen are very conscious, the 42 years, and how quickly that time has flown. I was asking one of Pedro and Gloria's boys, I asked him why God invented time. And I think he was curious to know, and he thought that maybe I had the answer. So I said, why? So everything does not happen at once. And so there we have time. It's hard to imagine that there is a time when there is no time. We are so creatures of time, are we not? And we count our days by time, and we have clocks and all manner of things that tell time for us. And time is very important, that we be on time and we be where we're supposed to be. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, Solomon writes, there is a time for everything. Now, I want you to notice that Solomon doesn't say there is time for everything. That would be an overreach. We all know in our busy lives there isn't time for everything. It is sometimes very frustrating that in 24 hours we can't fit in all that we plan to do and all that we hope to do. But there is a time for everything. There is a time for everything in the sense in which in God's providence, God has a time for all things. It is not like us that we run out of time after 24 hours. Everything has a time. And all that God has planned and purposed will be worked out in time. There's a time allotted for all that God has decreed, if you like. And just as nature has its seasons, so our lives have their seasons, and not all seasons are alike, and even so our lives are not all sunshine, nor are they all rain, but they are variegated, as the seasons are variegated. A season for every activity under the sun. And of course, while to us it may sometimes look like chaos and confusion, we can be assured that everything is beautiful in its time because it is the time that God has allotted for it. There is a season for every activity under the sun. There was a time decreed by God that I should be born. And so on November the 16th, 1940, I came into this world crying. There's also a time decreed by God when I should die. I do not know that time, but I know that it has been decreed, unless the Lord Jesus should return and I should with the saints on earth be snatched into glory. And we have all had seasons of laughter, and we have all had seasons of autumn tears. In our sign outside, I had a proverb of the Arabian proverb that said, all sunshine makes a desert. I thought that was a rather good proverb. Reminded, if we only had sunshine in our life, we might be rather dry indeed. But there's a place for tears. There's a place for mourning. I have had the experience of tearing things down, but I've also had the experience of building things up, and I'm sure that's true of yourself. I have experienced love. I've experienced hate. And so nothing remains constant except the one constant, and that is that in God's plans and purposes, there is time for everything in our lives and in the world itself. We see in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 that there is even a time for war, and there is a time for peace. You think of some of those wars that went on, the 400 years war in Europe after the 100 years war in Europe after the Reformation. But even in the most devastated countries, there comes that time of peace decreed by God. Now, Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes, I believe, to teach us to live wisely in a very foolish world. Wisdom in the Bible is to live in accordance with divine reality and as much as possible in harmony with God's order of things. You see, the foolish or the fool today, foolish man, seeks to alter his world in accordance to his sinful desires. And that's where we are in the modern world. And so sinful man finds himself in conflict with God's time. As a result, we would see that such a man is a man who is like a car on railroad tracks, and they're in for a bumpy ride because they're going contrary to what is the reality and the way God has made us. Solomon says that wise men and women see life both in its limitations and yet in its variety and ever-changing life experiences and adjust themselves to it. One does not expect to win all the time. Even the Pittsburgh Penguins, after winning back-to-back, lost out in the playoffs. One does not expect to live life without tears. Or perhaps many in our day and age think that life should be lived without tears. It is not wise. There are many who are raised today to think that they should never have any trouble, that they should always be in bumper cars with lots of padding. We must not expect to triumph all the time. We must not expect to see ourselves in unending sunlight. We must not expect that we're always mending and there is never a tear. So here in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, there's a time to be born, a time to die, there's a time to plant. And then as I went into the garden on Saturday, there was a time to uproot. There was a time to kill, and there's a time to heal. There's a time to tear down and a time to build. And all of this time is God's timing. And it's the timing for our life as individuals and for the nations as well. And yet, behind the kaleidoscope of circumstances, a situation, the wise man sees a purpose and situation, the wise man sees a purpose for it all without necessarily understanding all the details. as they work themselves in the warp and woof of life. And so he sees that there is a purpose, but he himself cannot come to an understanding perfectly of the purpose. Why is there war in the Second World War? Why then? And why is it that there's a tear? And why is it that there's a mending? He cannot see the purpose in all of these things. And that's what he struggles with. If you go down to verse 9, what does the worker gain from his toil? He asks the question. He's back to the worker again. He says, I've seen the burden that God has laid on men. Well, what is the burden God has laid on men? We'll see in a minute, but he has made everything beautiful in his time. That's a burden, he says, that God has laid on men, because there is this timing, and yet a man cannot grasp the meaning, if you like, of why such a thing is happening at that time. And then he adds, in terms of that, he has set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. So here we are, he has set eternity in the heart, and man cannot fathom what is done from beginning to end. So as we look at verse 9, Solomon asks the question, what does the worker gain from his toil? And the question is directed to the rat race, if you like, of life. Look about you. Look at the number of men and women who spend their days with their noses to the grindstone and their shoulder to the wheel. And they go to school, they get a job, they marry, they travel, the 401, day in and day out, they get a mortgage, they go into debt, they have a holiday or two, they try to raise a family, they try to keep the family together. But what is the end of it all? What is the purpose of it all? What is the meaning of it all? How few even ask the question. But that's the question of Solomon. A man goes about his toil, but what does he gain from all of that toil, all of that tears, all of that blood and sweat? He may get an honor here, he may get a pat on the back there, but mingled with toil and tears, blood and sweat, what is the purpose of it all? What is the meaning behind it all? And as we need to keep body and soul together, is it not enough, Solomon says, I have seen the burden that God has laid on men. It's not that just the man toils, but there's a certain burden that has been laid upon men. And we ask ourselves, okay, what is the burden? As I mentioned briefly, but let me spread it out a little, that God has laid on you and I. What is the thing that weighs a man down? What is the thing that affects us all at some point or other in our lives? Is it a local burden, or is it a universal burden? And that's the question we want to ask ourselves. It's a burden, I think, that we all bear. It's a burden more deeply felt by some than by others, but the burden is there. You remember last Sunday evening I made mention of this to you, who wrote the book, Solomon? When did he write it? I believe he wrote it in middle age. I believe it when he hit the wall, and the wall was simply this, that maybe this is good as it gets. In middle age, there's the mortgage and the family, and the family is growing up, and the job is a rather routine in the middle age, and suddenly you wake up one morning and you ask yourself, maybe this is as good as it gets. I think for myself, at least, before that, I was always had some goals down the road, goals that I intended to achieve, but the sudden realization that I might never reach those goals. That it was a setback, a shock to the system. So I went out and I bought a Mercedes-Benz. No, I didn't. I only dreamed of it. But this burden, we may suppress it. We may from time to time forget its presence, but the burden is there in the moment of reflection or grief or the failing health or the lost opportunity or acts of injustice. It surfaces, it arises like an unwelcome bile to the taste buds. And the burden is just this: God has made everything beautiful in his time. And we say, well, what is the burden to that? But we cannot discover the meaning. It is there. Everything is purposed and planned. But the question arises, why? If I can illustrate, all of you are familiar, I'm sure, with the quadriplegic named Johnny. As a teenager, she broke her neck in diving accident and has been confined to a wheelchair ever since. And we know that God has mightily used her in a wonderful way that probably wouldn't have happened had that incident not happened. And so it doesn't look very beautiful, if you like, but in a certain way, in its time, there was the ultimate beauty to the glory of God. But she tells the following story of a fellow quadriplegic who was looked after by his mother, and whatever happened, one night she put her son to bed and went to bed herself, and during the night a scout ant found this quadriplegic feeding tube. And now you can imagine the rest for yourself, that all night long the ants came and tormented this helpless body, and the mother found him a mass of bumps and red sores in the morning. Now, is that one of the things that Solomon calls beautiful in its time? Well, what is beautiful about this, or war, or cancer, or broken marriages, or cruelty, or wanton vandalism? Was Solomon living in the same world as we're living, as you and I, or the rest of mankind? As no, Solomon is not a fool in any sense of the word. He's not saying everything is beautiful, but he's saying everything has its place in God's timing. Everything has its purpose. Everything has its ultimate end. And the burden then for Solomon is to try and discover the why of the incident. And so you often hear, and I sometimes have said to you, that in prayer, I imagine most prayers, no, I shouldn't say that. I imagine too many prayers, maybe that's better, begin with why. Of course, it's not wrong. We see Jesus himself as he hung on the cross. Why have you forsaken me? The cross is beautiful in its time, but the fullness of the cross takes time to unpack. This is part of the burden of mankind that God has given to man to bear, coupled, it says in the scriptures, with the eternity that God has set in our hearts. And yet we live in a world that's so very temporal. If I can explain it this way, God in the beginning made everything good. In fact, on the last day of creation, he pronounced it very, very good. And I was listening to Rabbi Zacharias this morning, and the fellow was asked about how can there be evil with a loving God. And he began by trying to explain how could God create a world in which there is all of this crime and all of these things that are going on in the world. But that's not the world that God created, is it? And I think we have to begin there. When God created the world, it was good. It was man who had sinned. It was man who fell. Sin did not enter the world when God first created. So it was beautiful, if you like. Very good. Further, in God's providence following the fall, every season, month, day, hour, nanosecond has an overarching purpose and a reason for it. But here's the burden. God has placed eternity in our hearts, and we're mortal. God has placed eternity in our hearts, and yet mankind cannot grasp, except by grace, the God who has created all things. Solomon is not saying, here, we long for the immortality, that is part of it, but we long to know as God knows. We long to have the mind of God in these matters. So if someone comes to us weeping, someone comes to us mourning, someone says a tragedy has happened, and we long to know why. What is the reason? What is behind this? And the great burden that lays on the heart. So in the incident in Saskatchewan, many people had the question, why? These young men with life ahead of them, and yet now snatched from this world into the next. We are, in that sense, unlike the brute beasts, aren't we? Who never ask why. God created man in his image, and as an image bearer, we want to know, we want to understand, we want to comprehend the reason why, to search out relationships between cause and effect. This is the burden, I think, that is laid upon Solomon's heart. There's not a person here tonight who has not asked or never asked why. I have said before, I'll say it again, but man is a meaning monger. He has to have meaning. He thirsts for meaning. He thirsts for a reason for his existence, a reason why he's on this planet, a reason to live, a purpose to live. Man is a meaning monger. And if you don't believe me, go to a library and go to the nonfiction, book after book, philosopher after philosopher is seeking to give reasons for our existence. Reasons why we're here. Reasons for the way we live and how we should live in this world. He must, each one of us, even the most simple-minded, have this burden in their heart. What is the purpose of my existence? Who am I? Our world and our lost world today, and having forsaken the Bible, man is reduced to the animal and claims that he is simply belongs to the animal kingdom. He is not made in the image of man. Who am I? But of course, as he struggles with the devaluation of man, he then begins to do things to man that animals do to animals. Why am I here? What is my purpose for existence beyond the fact that I keep soul and body together by tomorrow morning punching in at the factory? And then the question is asked, where am I going? This is the burden that God has laid on the hearts of men. Chuck Colson tells the following account of prisoners in a concentration camp. I believe it was in the Gulag. And there's a huge pile of sand at one end of the compound. And they went out in the morning and they're told to move it to the other end of the compound. So they got busy with their shovels, they got busy with their wheelbarrows, and they moved that huge pile of sand and they took it to the other side of the compound. And then when they got up in the morning, they had to reverse the process and they had to take that pile of sand they moved the day before and bring it back to where they had taken it from. And so long as they felt that what they were doing had a purpose, they were fine. But the moment they realized that there was no purpose to their work, they went mad. There was no purpose to what they're doing. Many feel that way as they work in the factories. They go mad and they seek outlets in pleasures that destroy. They had to have a purpose. That was the burden of the whole thing. I think if I had been there, I would have made a purpose out of it. I'd say, listen, I think I can do more wheelbarrows than you can. I don't know. But it reminds you, doesn't it, that they just lost it. And that's the burden that Solomon is speaking about. Why am I here? Where am I going? What is it? What is my purpose here? Yes, I have a kingdom. Yes, I have a castle, if you like. Yes, I have every pleasure known to mankind. Yes, I go to work and I plant this and I plant that and I build this and I build that. But ultimately, I'm going to die. Ultimately, I'm going to leave it all behind. What is my purpose then? Because there's a time to live and there's a time to die. This is a burden we bear. That God has a time for all things and a purpose for all things. But for us, we cannot discern the meaning of the time or the meaning of God's providence. We toil, we work, we go about our daily activities. On top of it all, we ask ourselves the question, why? And this is the clincher, if you like, but God, Solomon says, has a time for everything under the sun. Everything comes to pass in the time he has decreed, and we are made in his image, and therefore this is why we bear the burden, because in our fallen nature we cannot grasp what God is doing always in his providence. And he has set our hearts, unlike the brute beast, a desire to know the cause and the effect and the reason behind it all. And this is the clincher. Yet we cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. We are godlike without being God. And so therein, Solomon says, is the burden, along with the burden, vanity, that soap bubble that when touched, when pricked, disappears. Okay, but do we want to live wisely in a broken world? Do we want to live wisely in a foolish world? Lesson one then, don't try to be God. That's what man is doing today. No man can ever plumb the depths of God's purpose, his reason for doing things, and everything that transpires in our lives. Nor does God always take us into his counsel, nor does God always give an account of his actions and activities. Sometimes in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, God explains what he is doing, but at other times, he leaves his purposes unexplained, and they are called to obey and put their trust in God. A 3-year-old said to her mother, why? And that's what they usually do. And sometimes the only answer is just because. My Uncle Bruce was a free Methodist, and he was a true believer, and he lived in the Madoc area. And he had an only son. He had an only daughter, but he also had an only son. And the only son went to the Methodist Bible College. I think the intent was that he would enter the ministry. That was what he felt called to. And one day, his son was struck by a truck while riding a bicycle and was instantly killed. And his boy's death almost killed my uncle, and this was some years after that he was sharing this with me. He was a farmer, and we were doing some haying together, and he told me, for 6 months after the accident, he said, I could not make the sky turn blue or the grass green. So obviously a huge depression for my uncle, a huge blow. And he told me that everything was black. And he said one morning he left the barn for the house, and as he approached the house, he got by the side of the house, and he fell on his knees, and he said to God, why did you take my only son? Why, Lord, why? And then he said, at that moment, he felt an arm from heaven embrace him, and a voice said, "Bruce, my will be done." It's amazing. What's even more amazing, he said, "When I got on my feet, the sky was blue and the grass was green." Now, there's no explanation into why that life was taking, preparing for the ministry, and loved, so loved by his father and mother. It was a burden, but it was God's timing. And we're not God. And so there comes a point, "Lord, thy will be done." It doesn't mean there are no answers. I was asking a fellow the other day, "What is the meaning of life?" It's a way to start, isn't it? "Can you explain to me?" Ask him the question. Let him explain to me, "What is the meaning of life?" He couldn't answer. He turned the question back on me, and he said, "Okay, so what is the meaning of life?" And I said, "To glorify God and enjoy Him forever." We do have answers, don't we? We do have answers. As Christians, we do have answers. How we got here, why we're here, and where we're going. You see, in a certain sense, Solomon is living in the old covenant. And Solomon doesn't have what we have as Christians. He didn't have the New Testament. He didn't yet have the coming of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ, the resurrection of Christ, the ascension of Christ, and the conquest of death. There was a burden to Solomon, but still for us, we have these questions that arose in my uncle's heart. Why had God taken his only son? Well, we know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, but as believers, it behooves us all to be humble about many things to which there are no answers in the present. But the Bible makes it specifically clear, and as we come, of course, to the end of the chapter, we begin to see that everything will be brought into judgment. There will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed, and we know that everything will be brought into judgment. We might meet people, "Why did my dad die? My mother's not with us on Mother's Day. Why did my boyfriend break up with me? Why did our church split? Why is life so hard? Why? Yet the wise man comes to this conclusion, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Now, if you look at verse 12, notice Solomon has a series of "I knows," and we'll just look at that for a few moments. And that is helpful when we have these difficulties to go with what we know, what we can be certain of, and that's what he does in verse 12. "I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live." He could say that this is a certainty, that there is nothing better, there's nothing beyond this, than a man should be happy and that a man should do good while he lives. That's helpful. When your heart is so full of whys, your faith is taking a beating, your pain is so deep, you're defeated and so bitter, and you can taste it in your mouth. And one of the best things you can do is start with a certainty. And as Solomon writes, "I know there's nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live." You might think Solomon has lost it for a moment here. What are you talking about? But he's talking about this burden to know, to search out, to find the answers. And then suddenly he talks about being happy and doing good, about eating and drinking and finding satisfaction in your toil. And it doesn't make any sense at the moment, but it does. Look at it. Don't you see what Solomon is saying? He's saying, stop playing God. God is God and you're not. For man to enjoy what he has and to do good to others. In other words, today we see in society man seeks to be God and take the place of God. And man isn't fit to take the place of God. In fact, when man plays God, the world is in trouble, as we saw in Nazi Germany. Solomon says, live within your existence. Live where you are at. Live in the moment that you're at. Enjoy the moment that you find yourself in and seek to do good to others. Live within your sphere, your creaturely existence, and enjoy the creaturely boundaries that God has set for you, because more than that is hubris, as the Greeks would say, pride. Paul puts it this way, godliness with contentment is great gain. Live a day at a time and enjoy each day to the fullest in Christ. I remember a lady in my former church who was all doom and gloom. And you met persons like that as well. Life for her was a burden that had to be borne. She saw problems here and everywhere and did everything. And many of the problems never cropped up at all. And Solomon is saying to her in a certain sense and to myself, who often was weepy enough, I don't know everything, but I know this. Be happy and do good while you live. Live within your boundaries. Eat and drink and enjoy what you have. Enjoy your workplace and take satisfaction in your toil. If you can do that, he says, it is a gift of God. And too many are overstretching themselves. Too many are overmortgaging themselves. Too many are overstriving or seeking honors and degrees and money, and they find no satisfaction in living. Part of the problem is we think we know what is best for us. Wouldn't we govern the universe better? We would bring God to the bar of our justice. We accuse God of the we accuse God with our wives, and we blame God for all the ills that are caused by mankind. We live in an age when men strut like they were God. They're roosters in a barnyard. They are wiser than God, kinder than God, more loving than God. Or as one so-called Hollywood actor in disgrace said, when I stand at the judgment throne, I will question God for what he has done. No, you won't question God for what you have done. I was working out in the spa, sitting in the steam room after my workout, and I asked the fellow, there were only two of us, if he believed in God. I said, do you believe in God? Well, he was so shocked. God! Wow, he's like a deer caught in the headlights. I must have thought of that, you know. You can talk about anything in the steam room, you can't talk about God. No, he shouted, are you an idiot? Are you stupid? Are you an imbecile? Well, I could be all three, I guess. Well, how can you believe in God? I have all these wars and all this bloodshed and all this starvation, and on he went. Why, you couldn't believe in God. And man, he really stumped me. So I said, through the haze of steam, tell me, if there is no God, I asked him, is there no God? He said, no God, he shouted again. Then I said, then why do we have wars, bloodshed, and starvation? You know, if I was an atheist, I'd want God, because I could blame somebody. But this guy, he was blaming God for a God that didn't exist in his mind. So it must be man who's the problem. Man who causes wars and bloodshed and starvation. We blame everything and everybody but ourselves. The fellow was playing at God. He knew everything, and because he knew everything and why things should fall out the way they do, his puny, finite, smidgen of a mind could dismiss the God of the universe. No, Solomon says, no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. So stick to your sphere. He is in heaven, you're on earth. He is the creator, you're the creature. He's omniscient. And you are ludicrous in comparison and dumb than dumber. Why, look at the sun, how far it is from the earth. That's just one miracle after another. God knows all things. He knows all mathematics. I hardly know 2 plus 2 equals 4. And then quickly look at verse 14. A second. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing can be taken from it. So my wise, your wise are not going to change it. Here's the difference between the wise man and the fool. The wise man realizes that God's ways are past finding out, but he also realizes that God's ways do not need amending or revision. Jesus said to Paul, "How hard it is for you to kick against me, to rebel against God. The way of the rebel is hard, but for those who fear God, they learn to submit and humble themselves under his mighty hand." Do any of us know what is best for us or for our church here at Faith or for other individuals? Solomon says, the purpose of God will stand. Why live as those who are filled with regret and wish they could change the past or alter the future? Now, this doesn't mean you shouldn't pray. It doesn't mean you shouldn't learn and grow. It doesn't mean you shouldn't strive and achieve. But the scholarship you didn't get, or the job that didn't appear, or the position you never had, you can leave it in God's hands. He knows what is best for you and I. The loss of a loved one calls for tears, but all the tears in the world cannot change the fact. So Job, seeing it so clearly, said the following, "The Lord has given, the Lord has taken, blessed be the name of the Lord." So out of this passage, this time, and this eternity in our hearts, we remind ourselves to live wisely, by living within our means and our boundaries, enjoying each day, making it fruitful, and being fruitful in our life. Be happy and to serve others, reminding ourselves that what is done, and that we are to fear God and trust God, and remember that God will make it all right in the end. It will all come together, for our God has purposed all things for his glory and for our good. Let us pray. Our Heavenly Father, you have laid a burden upon our hearts. You put eternity in our hearts, and yet we are mortal. And Lord, we see that time is fleeting, and we see in our life exactly what Solomon says. Sometimes there's going up and going down. Sometimes, oh Lord, there's laughter, and sometimes there are tears. It's all found there, oh God, but you have a purpose for it all. And while we cannot always say what the purpose is and the meaning for our life specifically, I'm sure from glory we'll look back upon it and we'll see your wisdom as you are the potter and we're the clay. And, O Lord, as you work in our lives, the various circumstances and situations to mold us and to change us more and more into the likeness of your Son. Help us not to play the God thing, Lord, but help us, O Lord, to live within our sphere. Help us to enjoy that which you have given to us and be content where you have placed us. And, O Lord, our delight be found in you. Help us, O Lord, to not only enjoy those things that are daily, but help us, O Lord, to do good to others, so that we might, O Lord, receive that reward, the rewards that will follow. And in all of these things, O Lord, well, Solomon in his despair said, "Vanity, vanity. We know that it is an overstretch on Solomon's part. A time in his life, O Lord, perhaps when he had done all of the things that he wanted to do and suddenly realized that's as good as it gets. I'm mortal. And when I leave behind what I have done, who knows who will destroy it and bring it to nothing. Help us to remind ourselves, Lord, that if we have Christ, we have all things in Jesus Christ. And, O Lord, help us to see that you are working all things out for our good and what pleases us, even in doing that, for your glory. Amen.